Title for you here this morning, and PowerPoint comes up, we'll show you that, but we just wanted to, any of you out there that were expecting something, could lower your cubies at this thing, so. Go ahead. Go ahead, click over. There we go. That's our sermon title.
Up and running.
Not as good as Jay, so lower those expectations. And just so you know, we are not going to be telling stories like Jay.
Yeah, in fact, stories take too long.
And we don't have real shiny heads.
Yeah. His head's pretty, isn't it?
I know, it's just pretty.
Just a couple. Oh, okay. Hey, all joking aside, we all know we love our chief storyteller, Jay Jackson. That's why we make fun of him. So I hope you're praying for him while he's over in the Philippines again. He's dealing with some issues with church in Singapore. And he's also doing work with the Buklo tribe. It has many difficult elements as well. So please keep him in your prayer. For those that are wondering who we are, like who are these knuckleheads up here, I'm Lee Stevenson.
Yeah.
I'm Lee Stevenson. I'm part of the church leadership and deacon here at the church. Yeah. Just PM. Yes, we do. We still have a bump in the road somewhere.
Guess what? We have lift.
All right. Good deal. And I'm Chad Nugent, and I'm also part of the church leadership team here and also a deacon of the Potter's House. And just don't act surprised because you guys said it was okay for me to be a deacon. So, the true title of our message today is Inspiration versus Implementation. And this is a question that I've been battling with for a long time. How do we round that base of inspiration to take us on home to implement what we were inspired upon? So in baseball, we all know that we're standing at home plate. And let's take that into a real life example. And let's call home plate and swinging for the fence part of our inspiration. So we hit that ball. That's the inspiring moment, the moment we can now start out on our journey. And once you hit it, you're trained to just run. And you're looking ahead to your first base coach. He waves you on, you turn on to second. And then when you turn to second, you automatically need to be looking over to that third base coach to see if you can round out and go on to third. So let's say we're moving on to third, and we're watching that third base coach. And he's saying, go on home. He's waving his arms on home. But yet, I know when I played Babe Ruth baseball, I always had that want to look back and see the play on the ball. You're not supposed to do that at all. You're never supposed to doubt your coaches. But it happens. And I can remember one time in particular where I rounded third, took three quick steps, and came back to third when I could have made it home. And that's kind of what we're going to be talking about in inspiration to implementation. This is how it happens. We're rounding third, and we look to see the play on the ball, and we second-guess ourselves. And those of you who have been here for the past several weeks, you've been probably witness to some very inspiring moments. 3 weeks ago, we had Lee, myself, and a team, including Carl and guys here from the Potter's House, from First Baptist, and from Osage Hills, all go to the Philippines. And it was just an incredible, incredible trip. And then last week, you guys got to hear from the ladies that went to Uganda and Madagascar. And then just incredible, incredible stories. In fact, you guys were probably inspired when Chelsea said she's going back there. It was just an incredible, incredible stories. But if you've been around here a while, you've also heard of other stories. Us going to Haiti, or the team that went to Haiti, or the trip to Uganda, or Jay's multiple trips to the Philippines. In all of these events, some of us, all of us, have once been inspired. Some of us have even been part of these events and have been inspired when we went out of the country or when we went to do Be the Church Sunday or an event that we have here at Potter's House. I've watched change happen in so many lives, but it was change. And I'm sad to say that in my own life, it doesn't always turn into life change, and that happens more often than not. I do not want to argue the fact that life inspiration happens on these trips, and I do not want to argue the fact that life change occurs, because it does. But for me, sometimes that life change or that momentum to implementing what I was inspired upon does not happen, and it bugs me, and I want to figure out why that is. So perhaps you have even had some of these same questions.
So what's next? Seems like we have a problem here at hand. Does inspiration end with the pale life reality of a 40-hour work week and a self-pleasing seeking weekend? It seems like that's American culture epidemic. Does inspiration find its demise in issues of our day-to-day life and overwhelms every moment of our time? Does inspiration get drowned out by constant want of a bigger home, a newer car, or a faster boat?
Lee and I would like to go a little bit further and read you a couple resources that we came across and in studying this topic, trying to figure out what happens. Here's a quote from ChristianNewsWire.com. Almost 2 million Americans go on short-term mission trips sponsored by more than 40,000 American churches, schools, and other organizations that send teams around the world. Unfortunately, statistics are showing that now some of these trips don't make a long-term positive difference in the lives of those who go, and sometimes not even in the lives of those who are being served.
A case study by Kurt Allen Verbeek, a professor of psychology at Calvin College in Michigan, reported that only 16% of 113 people, so if you do the math, that's about 18 people, candidates reported long-term life change on a mission trip to Honduras where they constructed a home for a missionary family. In fact, the case studies went further to show that less than 3 years later, no connections to the missionary family from that group were prevalent in the lives of the short-term mission.
That's a pretty sad study, because American church culture has shifted. We are now spending more on short-term missionaries than we are on long-term missionaries, short-term mission trips over long-term missionaries. So please understand that I am not going against short-term mission trips. That is not what I'm talking against at this point. In fact, they have a very useful purpose in the life of the church if they are structured and they are used in moderation. And in the one that I was a part of, and Lee as well, we felt that it was a welcome relief for the missionaries just to see people from their own country. And it impacted me more than even I can ever imagine. I mean, just every day I think back to instances that happened there. But I still feel that more can be done with the knowledge that we learn from these short-term mission trips and the inspiration that we receive from them. I love the quote written by Jim Cimbala. I don't know if you guys have read the book, Fresh Wind, Fresh Fire. But he states, "I despaired at the thought that my life might slip by without seeing God show himself mightily on our behalf." So he despaired at even that thought that God wouldn't move through him. And that's where I sit. What does God want to do through me with the impact that he has made on me in this short-term mission trip? I truly feel that that is written on the heart of every Christian, that desire is there. And I do know that this church lives out that desire.
Over the past few weeks, you've heard from many of the people that have been on short-term mission trips, and perhaps you've even been inspired by them as we were. So why are we telling you this now, that there's an issue with short-term missions? We're telling you this because there is. In fact, Chad and I'll go further to tell you that there's an issue with the American church culture and regarding missions in general.
Now, I know you're sitting there saying, whoa, 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 wait till I tell Jay this. Don't tell Jay. But when he gets back, you guys are going to be so busted, these deacons are going down. But before you tattle on us, I want you guys to hold on to these thoughts because we're going to come back to them. But before then, we got a few stories we would like to tell, even though I told you we wouldn't.
So in 2 Kings 3, Israel's getting ready to go to war, and there's three kings that joined to fight the Moabs. They started across the Dead Sea, and they ran out of water, and they thought they were going to die of thirst. Elijah had told them to dig a ditch as well. This is what the story from God's Word is. You can follow along in your bulletin. It's actually on your bulletin this morning. 2 Kings 3, 16 through 26 says, "For this is what the Lord says, I will fill your valley with pools of water. For this is what the Lord says, you will see neither rain wind nor rain, yet the valley will be filled with water, and you, your cattle, and your other animals will drink. This is an easy thing in the eyes of the Lord. He will deliver Moab in your hands. You will overthrow every fortified city and every major town. You will cut down every good tree, stop up the springs, and ruin every good field with stones. The next morning, about the time the offering of sacrifice, there was a water was flowing from the direction of Edom, and the land was filled with water. Now all the Moabites had heard that the kings had come to fight against them, so every man, young and old, who could bear arms was called up to the stations on the border. When they got up early in the morning, the sun was shining over the water. The Moabites across the way, the water looked red like blood. "That's blood," they said. "Those kings must have fought and slaughtered each other, now to plunder Moab." But the Moabites came to the camp of Israel. The Israelites rose up and fought them until they fled. And the Israelites invaded the land and slaughtered the Moabites. They destroyed the towns. Each man threw a stone on every good field until it was covered. They stopped up all the springs and cut down every good tree. Only Kir-Hareseth was left with his stones in place, but the men armed with slings surrounded and attacked it. When the king of Moab saw that the battle had gone against him, he took with him 700 swordsmen to break through the king of Edom, but failed.
So what does this story tell us? In just a quick summation, what was happening was three kings were coming across the desert. They were 7 to 8 days into the desert, and they ran out of water for their horses, for all their men, and they were getting ready to die of thirst. And they asked themselves, you know, did God bring us out here to be slain by the Moabites? And so they went and got the prophet Elisha, and Elisha told them to start digging ditches. Now, you have to imagine what would be going through your mind. You're in the middle of the desert, and you need to start digging ditches. It just don't make sense. But they did it. They took a step, and they moved, and they dug ditches. And God rewarded that step by coming in and filling those ditches with water. And it was just an amazing story. I read through this several times in many different versions to fully comprehend it, that God honored that step, and he helped them defeat the Moabites. So I got another story I want to tell you about the Philippines. We were over there, and it was the second day, and we were kind of challenged to break up into different work groups and do different things. And I'd had on my mind the whole time that we were coming over here to put a roof on this building, and that I was going to be working on some trusses and stuff like that. So when we start breaking up, there goes Carl over to my trusses. And I'm sitting there thinking, there went my job. Carl just took my job. And I was getting kind of angry. And I was praying for a fire to pop up in the jungle so he could go do his job or something like that. Because in case you don't know, Carl's a firefighter. But we were challenged with this one thing of this log that you can see in that picture. And it was sitting there in the middle of the structure. And it's not just any log. It's a coconut tree or palm tree, something. It was ridiculous. I'd rather take out an oak tree any day. But there was an axe sitting there, and there was the log sitting there. And I took a big sigh, and I said, okay. And I made that first step towards that log. And then I took a step back and grabbed my brother, and then take another step towards the log. And we went over there, and we grabbed the axe handle, and we started beating on that thing. And we beat on that thing. And then our lovely, encouraging pastor walks over and says, well, I'm so glad you're working on this. It's taken me 3 days to do one of these before. I was like, holy cow, we only got 4 days. So I was discouraged at that point. But my brother's an animal. So we tackled that thing. Lee came over and helped us. And in about 4 hours, we were able to get that root out of the ground. And it was just one of those moments where you're just kind of proud and getting that root out of that ground.
I think we can all relate to a story in our lives where we were moved to do something and didn't do it. The last story that opportunity I had was I had the opportunity to go back to the Philippines. I actually lived there 29 years ago in the service, lived in the Orient for 4.5 years. And I was a young airman, and I was probably doing some things, actually take probably out of there, I was doing some things that I shouldn't have been doing, because back then I wasn't a believer. I knew who God was, but I wasn't by all means, wasn't a believer. Only God could have laid out 29 years later that I just happened to be going to a church that actually set up a trip to the Philippines and actually went back, because there's no way we could humanly possibly plan that down the road. We can't hardly plan next week's schedule, much less 29 years from now. Anybody that knows me knows I love humor. That's how I get through a lot of things. Mine started with a little bit of fun with Jay. I don't know if some of you were here or not when he gave the M&M story. I put some blue M&Ms in a bag and put them on his desk, but I put one yellow one in there. And I wrote on there with a really small marker, says, pick me. And they made him a little card in Tagalog, which is the Filipino language, that says the choice should be obvious. Actually learned my first Bukalo word, Bulongan, is for monkey. But I say that because I actually had an opportunity to actually go back to many years ago when I wasn't living really like I should have and actually make things right. And there's no way 29 years ago you could have told me that I would have been back in country on a mission trip and in a group prayer like this here. Just absolutely phenomenal, the opportunities we get for a second chance.
And we got one more story to show you. Many of you have probably seen the movie God Is Not Dead, and we're going to show a clip from that right now. And if you guys were here last Friday night, it played here. It's just an incredible, incredible story of this kid that decided to take a stand. And if that video does come up, it's going to kind of tie into the common thread that we're going through this. So just be watching and thinking about a common thread between inspiration to implementation. And hopefully it'll play.
And with your permission, I would like to bypass this senseless debate altogether and jump to the conclusion, which every sophomore is already aware of, there is no God. All that I require from each of you is that you fill in the papers I've just given you with three little words, God is dead, along with your signature. Assuming we reach a unanimous consensus, which I expect we will, I will be spared the tedious duty of slogging through dry and dusty arguments, and you will bypass the section of the course in which students have traditionally received their lowest grades of the semester. And when you finish, please pass your papers to the right. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, a lowercase g. Maybe this one ought to get extra credit. Thank you. Excuse me, Mr.
Wheaton. Josh Wheaton.
Mr. Wheaton, is something wrong?
Yeah, I can't. I can't do what you want. I'm a Christian.
No, don't worry. You can still go back to your dorm room and sink to your knees and pray at your bedside if you'd like. What you do in your personal life is your business, but what you do in this class is mine. All right, Mr. Wheaton. Allow me to explain the alternative. If you cannot bring yourself to admit that God is dead for the purposes of this class, then you will need to defend the antithesis, that God is not dead, and you'll need to do it in front of this class from the podium.
Sorry that didn't come up, but I hope you guys got the point that he had to tell why God was not dead.
So we share these stories for what purpose? What's the common thread? I want to propose the common thread is one step, which we'd like to define as implementation.
Let's go back through these stories real quick and review each one. The one that Lee told about Israel. Israel going to defeat the Moabites, run out of water. God asked them to do one thing, and that's dig ditches. And he rewarded them by filling those ditches with water and empowering them to defeat the Moabites. And then there's the story of the tree root, where I had visions of what I really wanted to do, but God changed that plan. And I took one step towards that tree root, and he rewarded that. And then there's Lee's story, where he was in the Philippines as a young airman, and he just wasn't doing the right things, and he admits that. But yet he got a second chance to come back to the Philippines and do the things that God had called him to do. And then there's this story of God is not dead, where this young man takes one step to defend what they called the antithesis of God, he is alive, which would be the opposite of God is not dead. But he took that one step towards that. So we pose two questions to you. How do we get from inspiration to implementation? And then we told you that there is a very big problem in American missions, particularly with STMs, short-term mission trips.
James 2:17 states, in the same way, faith by itself, if not accompanied by action, is dead. So I want to take the time, can't tell we're nervous, can you? I want to take that into our title and actually have it stating that inspiration without implementation is dead. The two can't coexist independently. Faith without action is dead. Inspiration without implementation is dead. Faith without works is dead.
And we could go on and on to draw the parallels between this, but I want to follow James down further when he says in James 2:18, now some may argue some people have faith, others have good deeds, but I say, how can you show me your faith if you don't have good deeds? I will show you my faith by my good deeds. So I want to push that back, like Lee had said, back into the James 2:17, faith without works is dead. I want to push that into inspiration without making that first step to implementation is dead as well. We cannot let God inspire us without making the first step to do what he inspired us upon. And there's so many times we fail. So what if we fail? What if we do not let inspiration in our hearts, given from God, lead to implementation? I am so relieved to tell you that our amazing Creator filled his scriptures with amazing stories of second chances. Our God is a God of second chances. We can even see real life stories such as Lee's of his Philippine second chance. The Bible is so full of these. We've listened to Jay on so many weeks talk about the stories in the sermon series, The Beginnings. Adam and Eve, they fall from the garden, but yet God gives them a second chance. And then we see the story of Abraham and Isaac, where he brings Isaac to the altar because God had told him to, yet he provides a way of escape, and he provides that ram as an escape and a second chance. And then we go from Noah and the ark, and many of you are familiar with that story where God gives Noah a second chance. But it all falls down to what God has done for us in the story of the cross. You know, God knew that Adam and Eve would fall, yet he provided that way of escape. He provided that second chance.
So we want to close with a story about the best is yet to come. A woman was diagnosed with a terminal illness and had been given 3 months to live. As she was getting her things in order, she contacted her pastor and asked him to come to the house and discuss some of her final wishes. She told him which song she wanted to have sung in her funeral service and which scripture verses that would like to have read, what outfit she wanted to be buried in. She requested to be buried with her favorite Bible. As the pastor prepared to leave, the woman suddenly remembered something else. There's one more thing, she said excitedly. What's that, said the pastor. This one's very important, said the woman. I want to be buried with a fork in my right hand. The pastor stood looking at the woman, not knowing quite what to say. The woman explained, in all the years of attending church socials and potluck dinners, when the dishes at the main course were cleared, someone would inevitably lean over and say, keep your fork. That was my favorite part of the meal because I knew something better was coming. Very likely chocolate cake or a deep dish pie. So when people see me in a casket with a fork in my hand, they're going to ask, what's the fork for? I want you to tell them, keep your fork, because the best is yet to come. And there's Chad's. There's Chad's fork. There's been so many times in my life when I was inspired, but yet I didn't move. I think every one of us can relate to something like that God inspired us to do something, but for whatever reason, we didn't do it. There's been mission trips that I was a part of that have faded after the day-to-day life kicked back in. But what if we took that first step? What if we pushed forward? If we grabbed our forks and said, bring it on. D.L. Moody once said, let God have your life. He can do so much more with it than you can. We want to end with the song, Oceans. But before we do, I want to read the lyrics for you. You call me out upon the waters, the great unknown, where feet may fail. And there I find you in the mystery, with oceans deep, my faith will stand.
Yeah.
Are we on? We have one more thing to tell you. Give us like 10 seconds. We're actually out early. We're like 15 minutes early because we speak much faster when we're nervous. So, we have our slides back up.
It did turn on. I just wanted to close with this one thought. If you guys didn't get anything from this message, I want to make sure that you guys understand that inspiration, whether it comes from anywhere in your life, it's a gift from our Father. And that if you don't move that to implementation, it dies in your hearts. Just like faith without works is dead, the same thing with inspiration to implementation. It will die in your hearts unless we move forward. And so I do, when you do step out on those waters like that song declared, and you start implementing your inspirations, grab your enormously large fork, because remember, the best is yet to come. Thanks.
Us from our sin, He is our hope, our righteousness, Jesus. Only Jesus.